Trustee Bachner.
Here.
Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Brennan.
Here.
Excuse me. Trustee Johnson.
Here.
President Adusi.
Here.
Can you get a motion to...
We're going to get a motion to allow Lisa to join telephonically due to work.
I move to allow Lisa Gillis to join telephonically due to work.
Second.
Okay.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Excuse me. Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Welcome, Lisa.
Yeah, welcome. Oh, look at that baby. Okay, very good. So I don't know if we have any citizens' comments back there. Oh, Pledge of Allegiance. Yeah, sorry.
Yes,
oh,
I was.
Please stand. Do the Pledge of Allegiance. Oh, my gosh. Okay, Pledge of
Allegiance. To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. My apologies. Okay, now citizen comments. Oh my gosh, how did I right over that? Okay. All right, so we have several special presentations tonight. We have the 2024 Officer of the Year presentation. So I think we're going to have Chief O'Shea join us at the podium. It's the fun stuff of our job. Thank you. A lot to say.
Good evening. It's,
How about now?
Yep.
Yeah, there we go.
Perfect. There we go.
Good evening. It's always good to be first and follow the Pledge of Allegiance. Madam President, Village Board, and Administrator Walsh, on behalf of the Police Department, I am honored to welcome Officer Keegan Lenz to receive the River Forest Police Department Officer of the Year for 2024. I would also like to welcome Keegan's wife, Bridget, and parents that are here this evening, as well as any other fans or family members that may be out there. It's hard to tell. There's a lot of amazing people in attendance tonight. I recognize some of them from before. Just to give you a little background, Officer Lenz grew up in Oak Lawn and currently lives in the neighboring town of Evergreen Park. Keegan attended Marist High School in Chicago, where he excelled in his academics and serving others. He was awarded the Vicariate Youth Leadership Award from the Archdiocese of Chicago in his senior year in recognition of his desire to serve others and the community. Keegan caddied at the Beverly Country Club in Chicago for 10 years. His academic achievements, paired with his outstanding commitment to caddying and serving others, earned him the prestigious Chick Evans Scholarship for Caddies, which allowed him to attend Marquette University in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, on a full tuition and housing scholarship. Keegan graduated from Marquette in the spring of 2021 with a degree in secondary education and history. Officer Lenz was hired by the River Forest Police Department in January of 2022. The Officer of the Year Committee met on March 6, 2025. The nominations this year were Officer Keegan Lenz, Officer Megan Drake, and Officer Oscar Gonzalez. I'm honored tonight to announce that Officer Keegan Lenz has been named Officer of the Year of 2024. Yeah. To describe what some of the committee members reviewed and discussed during this meeting and selection, the nomination described Officer Lenz as a self-motivated, superior performing officer in a variety of activities, including enforcement, attendance, physical fitness, integrity, initiative judgment, and that he was always willing to help out other members of the department. Officer Lenz completed over 360 traffic stops in 2024 and led the department in total arrests for the year. During 2024, Keegan also led the department in driving under the influence arrests, 21 arrests in total, and was ranked second in the department in citations issued, 419. Officer Lenz will attend the Law Enforcement Memorial in Springfield in May 2025 as a representative for the River Forest Police Department. Keegan, you've already arrived up here, so once again, congratulations.
Thank you.
We have this nice plaque, and after I think we get through the awards, if that's okay, Madam President, we'll try to get everyone together for one picture rather than you guys getting up and down for multiple
Sounds like
occasions.
A good plan, Chief.
Thank you.
Good job.
Long day of speech.
I'm going to go. Thank you. Want me to give a speech?
Thank you.
I like
Thank
your
you.
Style.
Thank you.
Hey,
oh, yeah, that's cool. Familiar with it?
Yeah, I am. It was our, I went to Elizabeth Seat, so that was our
nice.
Brother school.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Be careful
okay,
with the wire.
Thank you.
I don't want you to get hurt.
I got work.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Sure.
Careful when they want to start offering to make speeches.
Yeah. Well.
Dangerous.
Madam President, we'd like to continue with some other awards this evening, and Deputy Chief Greenwood, soon to be Chief Greenwood, will be reading those this evening.
It's on fire.
Good evening, everybody. The first commendation, which is the department's highest award, other than a Purple Heart and other awards that we don't want to hand out, is a commendation. And the first one is for Detective Denise Zermano and Officer Mark Catalano. If you guys want to come on up while we read all about you, that'd be great. I'll get started. On August 23rd, 2024, at 6:51 p.m., Officer Catalano and Detective Zermano responded to a welfare check at 1140 Keystone. The caller stated that his mother called him crying and the mother was concerned because his mother had been drinking and stopped answering the phone. Upon arrival, Officer Catalano and Detective Zermano observed the mother's car in the driveway and nobody was answering the door. Officer Catalano and Detective Zermano called the son and he provided a code to enter the residence. Officer Catalano and Detective Zermano entered the residence and located the caller's mother, unresponsive and not breathing, in her bed. Officer Catalano and Detective Zermano called for an ambulance and assisted the subject to the floor. Detective Zermano began CPR while Officer Catalano retrieved the AED from his vehicle. Detective Zermano recognized the subject's condition to be similar to an opiate overdose and also administered Narcan. The AED was applied and the AED advised to continue compressions. The subject began breathing and ambulance personnel arrived on scene to continue treatment. The subject regained consciousness and was transported to the hospital for further treatment. Officer Catalano and Detective Zermano's attention to duty, training, and professionalism resulted in the saving of one's life and contributed to the safety of the community. Officer Catalano and Detective Zermano's actions are commendable and a credit to this department and the police service. Congratulations, Mark.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thank you. Much.
The next commendation is for Officer Eddie Coleman. Mr. Coleman, if you want to come on up. This commendation is presented to Officer Eddie Coleman. On September 25th, 2024, Officer Coleman was monitoring the Illinois State Police Emergency Radio Network, ISPERN, when he heard a broadcast regarding a vehicle taken during a hijacking in Berwyn. Officer Coleman located the vehicle and activated his emergency equipment and advised via radio that he was attempting to stop the vehicle. The vehicle made several turns in attempts to flee from him. Officer Coleman clearly called out locations over the radio and drove with due care while he pursued the vehicle. Officer Coleman was the lone officer in the pursuit while others were trying to reach his location. The vehicle struck a village pole in an alley in Oak Park. Officer Coleman drew his firearm and began giving verbal commands to the offender while exercising sound tactics. Officer Coleman used good communication to direct a team of officers to approach the vehicle with him and take the offender into custody. Officer Coleman extracted the subject from the vehicle and detained him in handcuffs. The offender suffered no evident injuries, no other persons were injured or property damaged. The driver was held for Berwyn police and was positively identified as the offender in the hijacking. A handgun was located inside the vehicle, and the offender made admissions to committing the hijacking. An investigation by Berwyn police revealed that the offender was responsible for at least five other prior armed robbery incidents. Officer Coleman showed great courage in a single-handedly pursuing a dangerous armed offender. Despite the high-stress nature of the incident, Officer Coleman maintained a calm composure, which helped him keep himself, his fellow officers, the public, and the offender safe. Officer Coleman's actions bring great credit to the village of River Forest and the police department. Congratulations, Eddie.
Thank you.
The next commendation is for Officer Anthony Cortez. You want to come on up, Anthony? On November 15th, 2024, at 10:05 p.m., Officer Cortez was dispatched to the 500 block of Ashland Avenue for a reckless driver driving on the parkway. Officer Cortez arrived quickly to the scene and observed the described vehicle stopped in the middle of the roadway. Officer Cortez approached the running locked vehicle and observed the driver was unconscious with his foot on the brake while in gear. Officer Cortez knocked on the window, was unsuccessful at waking the driver, determined the subject was displaying signs of an opioid overdose, and broke the passenger window of the vehicle. Officer Cortez placed the vehicle in park and administered a dosage of Narcan to the driver. Officer Cortez did not get a response from the Narcan and removed the subject from the vehicle with the assistance of Corporal Cassidy. The subject was laid on his back in the street, and Officer Cortez administered another dosage of Narcan. Officer Cortez conducted a sternum rub, began chest compressions, and observed the subject had started breathing faintly. The fire department arrived on scene to continue treatment and transported the subject to the hospital. The subject regained consciousness and was arrested for driving under the influence of drugs and reckless driving. The subject was given a clean bill of health at the hospital. Officer Cortez's quick responsive life-saving measures significantly increased the chances of survival and recovery. Officer Cortez's attention to duty, training, and professionalism resulted in the saving of one's life and contributed to the safety of the community. Officer Cortez's actions are commendable and a credit to the department and the police service. Congratulations, Anthony. Bring your partner with you?
Yeah.
Okay, that baby is too cute. Look at this.
Yeah, bring him up.
You go with Daddy?
Look at him. So I'm going this way. Thank you. Yeah. Hey, he's a cutie. Aww. Thank you again.
Got added in.
Well done.
Well done.
Yeah, we can't beat that. He wins. Finally, our last award for tonight, not least, is for Officer Paul Micah. Micah, if you want to come on up. On November 29th, 2024, Oak Park police received a call for a man with a gun in the area of 834 Lake Street in Oak Park. Officer Micah, Officer Casares, Officer Humphreys, and Officer Dozen responded to the area. The situation evolved rapidly with reports that shots were fired and an Oak Park officer had been shot. Officer Dozen did not hesitate with his response, securing his rifle and taking a tactical position in view of the armed offender. The offender was shot by responding Oak Park officers, and Officer Micah assisted in trying to take care of the injuries to the Oak Park officer. Officer Micah's attention to duty, use of training, and demonstration of professionalism are commendable and are a credit to the department and the police service.
Congratulations.
We can get everybody. I don't know if we can get everybody.
Sure.
Wow, thank you.
Yes.
You guys thank available? Congratulations.
Yeah, let's all do it. Yeah. One, yeah, please. Yeah.
Watch it.
We want to.
Yeah, I do that work.
Watch the
button.
Yes.
That's the cable.
I'll play it. I found it.
We have a photographer that puts us in. Hang on.
You'd like to be personal. I don't like playing. So.
We're going to be back there.
Oh, we got one more. Are we going to help?
All right.
Yeah.
Lisa, we'll Photoshop you in. Okay. We'll give him a couple minutes to. Maybe that's where all the catering foods go. Is that? Where are they meeting? We're going over.
Recess.
Recess.
Right,
right, exactly. Recess. Sure. Okay. Yeah, so I just want to open it up, right?
Yeah, that's something. Got to open this.
Okay. Yep. Okay, great. Oh my gosh, those are great stories and great organization. So our next up is the public hearing for the village operating budget. So I'd like to open up the public hearing. And then we will let
script. Yep, exactly.
Say the script.
All right. So the proposed fiscal year 2026 budget was just presented to the village board for consideration. Pursuant to state law, the village is required to hold a public hearing on its annual budget prior to its adoption. The notice of the public hearing was published on April 2nd, 2025. Notice must be published at least 1 week prior to the hearing. The budget has been available to the public for inspection at Village Hall as a hard copy and also on our village website and has been shared on our village communications. At this time, I invite the public to make any comments regarding the fiscal year 2026 budget.
Right. Seeing any public comments, hearing none. That's all we have. So we'll take a motion and a second to close the public hearing.
I'd like to make a motion to close the public hearing.
Second.
Okay. Let the clerk take the vote.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Okay, very good. So now it's elected official comments and announcements. So I'll maybe start with Trustee Bachner, if you don't mind.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement. So as we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on land that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We will remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. I had the benefit of meeting with a couple of scouts who are working towards their Eagle Scout designation in the past week or so, in completing their civic portion. So was interviewed, and they're both, I believe, juniors at OPRF. I was just so thrilled by the questions that they asked, how much they knew about River Forest, yeah, and how much they researched, wanted to understand how civics works in River Forest and the Village Board. And the questions were so insightful. So really, really just excited to be a part of that. So congratulations to Luke Leidenbluth and Ryan Ferris on their continued work as they look to gain their Eagle Scout badges. And I think that's it.
That's great. Thank you for doing that. It's wonderful. Trustee Gillis?
I have no comments tonight. I know that's surprising, but
no, that's
let's
okay.
Keep it moving. Thanks,
okay. I got it. All right. Did you hear that, Trustee Vincent?
I said that. Was that directed at me, Trustee Gillis? I'm not sure. But no, I just want to, again, reiterate, thank Rosie, Matt, and the village staff for preparing that budget, and also the presentation today. It was terrific. And also last, I want to, although our officers already left, but congratulate all of them for their service and for the awards and accommodations they received today. But it's also a testament to our leadership in our police department. So thank you also.
They're all gone, but it's recorded.
For the record. They can play it back. Okay. Thank you. That's it.
Nothing new to add. Thanks.
Okay, great. Trustee Brennan?
I have nothing to add.
I will cede my comments to my final meeting.
Okay.
But I would like to say congratulations to all those that were, I guess I can say newly elected, even though you already ran before. So congratulations to the new trustees.
Permission?
Just nothing really to add except for those, happy Easter, and for those who are celebrating Passover. Okay. I know it's an important time of the year, so I hope everybody has time with their family and safe travels where you're going.
Great. Okay. Thank you. Great comments. I have nothing to add, and I've already kind of commented on the great work that the administration did for the budget. Okay, so we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. So I can get a motion for the consent agenda A through J.
Motion to approve the consent agenda items A through J.
Second.
Okay. Any comments or questions regarding those items? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to read the items and then take the vote.
Consent agenda item A, Village Board of Trustees meeting minutes, March 24th, 2025. B, Village Board of Trustees Executive Meeting Minutes, March 24th, 2025. C, Administration Department Report. D, Monthly Department Reports. E, Monthly Payable, March 2025, $1,784,157.89. F, March 2025 Financial Report. G, Purchase Approval, Bulk Salt, State of Illinois Joint Purchasing Program. $63,570. H, Education and Sharing Day Proclamation. I, Earth Day Proclamation. J, Arbor Day Proclamation. Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Thank you. So moving on to new items or new business, we have 11A. If I can get a motion to adopt the grocery tax ordinance in a second.
Yeah. Go ahead. You can. I move to adopt an ordinance implementing a municipal grocery retailer's occupation tax and a municipal grocery service occupation tax.
Second.
Okay, great. Matt, do you want to say anything further? I think we touched on it during our budget.
Sure. Just to kind of recap, state legislation was changed last year in order to maintain the grocery tax that currently exists for those shopping and purchasing food items in River Forest. In order to maintain that tax, we need to adopt it locally, which is the ordinance that is presented before you tonight. Over the last 12 months, this specific revenue item is approximately a little under $1.3 million in revenue to our general fund.
And just to add on to that, I mean, I think we can expect, based on what they were talking about, is it's some additional sales tax from the expansion of the Whole Foods. So,
yes,
correct. We're hopeful that's the case. And I think that.
I have a question. Who manages the collection of this tax now that it moves locally?
The Department of Revenue will continue.
The state will continue to administer it. Yes.
Matt, can you remind us what's considered grocery retail? So, you know, I think of like convenient food stores. Are those part of it? Is it anybody who sells food or just would like a description of that?
Sure. It would count, I guess, what you would call snacks and kind of junk food, even at a 7-Eleven or a Walgreens, but also your typical grocery items as well. But if you were to go to Jewel and buy office supplies, for example, that would not be applicable. The regular sales tax would be in applied to those items, but it's just food items.
And it's listed as a food tax when you see it on the receipt then?
Correct.
Okay. It's medication, I think, prescription drugs. Have.
No.
Right? Yeah. Food and drug?
Prescription drugs or prescription drugs as well? I'm sorry, prescription drugs as well? Over the counter.
I
believe it's over the counter.
Oh, they're over the counter. Okay.
Over the counter, yes.
Over the counter.
I would agree with that. Yes. I'm sorry. It's not.
The name of it is food and drug. Like,
gotcha. Yeah, but not medication.
2.25% is what is the local tax.
Agreed.
And this is all added on when people do delivery services as well. It's a specific line item or?
Well, the delivery.
With certain things. I get you.
They would tax it the same way as it would be if you had gone to the grocery store.
You finding a way around it?
No, I do is order things online. So I'm just checking.
I like your thinking. All right, great. Yeah, it's okay. Any further questions for Matt or Rosie or anybody? Okay, if we could take the vote, please.
Trustee Bochner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Okay. Let's move on to B. This is the introduction of the Park District's Priory Park Plan Development Proposal. There's no action. I see Mr. Slenton in the audience, so this is your time.
Is that
Luke? Made it in time.
Yep.
So sorry, we have our own board meeting that we're going through that typically always goes long. So I'm Mike Slenton.
Welcome to ours.
I was kind of counting on you guys to
don't worry.
Follow suit with us.
You can always count on it.
So I'm Mike Slenton. I'm executive director of the Park District. Well, Mike Grant was going to join me, but they're still in closed session right now. So he did give me some written comments he wanted me to read real quick before I do the presentation. Good evening. My name is Mike Grant, and I am a resident and current president of the Park District. As such, I'd like to share some things about our presentation before Mike goes into some project detail. We are here this evening to introduce you to another Park District project, Improvements to Priority Park. We are looking at building change and the installation of a splash pad. Mike will go over the project details and specifics, but I want to point out that our ideas were well received at our Tuesday, April 1st public meeting. Most importantly, the project was extremely blessed by a sample of a large contingent in our town, our kids. Over the last year, I have discussed this project with many kids, and they like being able to see what the splash pad might look like. There are a few different renderings to get us. There were a few renderings to get us where we are today. As discussed, various projects of the splash pad components and offered feedback too. So 100% love this idea and are excited, but also understand this is only an idea now and not a reality. Please help us make this a reality. So with that, we'll go into my presentation. So again, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to talk tonight. So we're going to talk about Priory Park and our project there. There we go. So this is the site plan right now. What is this project? So it's going to be, I see it up there.
I wonder if the images are just really large.
Correct. That's what I was going to say, too.
Okay. You want me to go or you go again? Okay, got it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so multiple components to the project all sitting in the area over by where the Priory Center and the playground is. Project would include an approximate 1,700 square foot splash pad to the north of the existing playground. That's the top portion of the playground. The addition of 700 square foot addition to the Priory Center, and that would create about 1,000 square foot program space there. The addition of a picnic shelter with picnic tables. We'd be reusing the picnic tables up there as part of the project. And the addition of a new drinking fountain. The new one would obviously have bottle fill, dog bowl, you know, everything everybody wants. So exactly, if you want to look at it, it's over at Washington Triangle right now, the same drinking fountain. Total budget for this project is $800,000. We'll see if that holds now. but we do have the money in the bank for it. This project's been under consideration for the last 4 years as the board worked on developing a 3-year master plan. That plan is available on our website if you want to take a look at it. During that process, we've had multiple public meetings on the master plan in general and specific park projects. We also have been reviewing past community surveys. Out of that, one thing that kept coming back over and over was looking to build a pool. Obviously, we don't have that kind of funding or that kind of space. So we pivoted and to a splash pad as an alternate water amenity. In addition, Priory Center's always been on our wish list to expand, to try to bring additional programming up to the north end of town and specifically Priory Park. The location was selected for the splash pad primarily because we already have bathrooms at the Priory Center there. And we have, because of irrigation, we have a water line that can handle the capacity for what would be needed for the splash pad. Obviously, they would not be running at the same time. This park also has parking. And if you've been up there, that location where we're putting the splash pad is pretty, it's out of the way of most residential activity or sight lines. So we thought it was a good spot. We have started the public input process on this. So we did hold a meeting on April 1st. 8 people attended. That group was overall positive feedback. We did receive, 6 emails. 2 were opposed, 2 were in favor, 2 just had questions on that. So what we're going to do.
Can I ask you to go back to the,
sure,
the aerial? I'm a little.
Okay, so I don't have a. So you see the building there, You see the playground, which is the beige area. That's the tot. So it's that brownish, greenish area.
So when you come up the driveway, yeah, towards the property building, kind of screwed up the block.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, that path that goes around along the Dominican. Yeah. So that would actually probably be the most logical access point for people to go in.
Do you have another map that goes out further so we can really orient to the whole property, or is that as far?
Yeah, this is
as far
all...
as you go. Okay.
Pardon me? Yes. Well, not as far as your finger's going, but yeah, it's coming. It's coming straight south. No. Yeah. So if you look at the sidewalk, will straighten and tie out the right. sidewalk, and then it will hug the building. So the tiles, the brick, well, yeah. You're getting ahead of me, but that's okay. So the brick actually, when you look between the splash pad and the playground and the picnic shelter area, it's not defined as much there. That's where all the brick's going to go. So we don't want these slivers of green space that's going to be mud. So we will be reusing all the bricks and relocating them in that area. Basically, the whole southern half of the splash pad, they'll be wrapped around. So you see the blue is the splash pad. The ribbon around it is a 4-foot sidewalk that's required by IDPH. And then the brick will morph around that as we're getting more in detail into the plans. So this is the addition onto the Priory Center. It's a 700 square foot addition. Right now there is a 300 square foot room in there. So this will make it 1,000 square feet. Inside, when you look where the bathrooms are, we're going to be cutting interior doors for access for that room. So anyone who's been to the Keystone Center, this is the exact same layout, just slightly larger. This will, so the bathrooms will obviously be insulated, so we have year-round use. The bathrooms will not be still, in the wintertime, it'll only be still available for the interior of the building, not the general public after November 15th. Okay. So here's the
go back to the one prior. Uh-huh. The gray part is the part that's existing now.
The gray part is the existing storage room and the bathrooms. When you look at the beige, and you can see where it says 20 on the top, that measurement that says 20 feet.
Yeah, I think I see that.
That's the addition where that little, the rest of that going towards the building is actually existing building there.
Okay, so existing is gray plus some?
Yes,
yeah.
Gray plus another 300 square feet.
Where those doors are.
And then, put 700 beyond that.
And Mike, what are you planning to do with the beige area? Or how are you planning to use the beige area?
It will be a summer campsite.
Okay.
We use it now. It's not sufficient at all and we're really limited on what we can do. This will probably be our primary, more adult programming, fitness, because we'll finally have 1,000 square feet is really what you need to be able to do with movement in that. So that will be our primary activity up there.
Is that supposed to be one large room then?
It'll be one large room. Correct.
Okay.
So, and you can see the elevation, it'll have windows around all three sides. There'll be doors on both the east and west side. Again, real similar to how the Keystone Center is set up right now.
And if needed for shelter in place, would that be a okay place? I'm just thinking of tornadoes.
Or an emergency?
Yeah.
If it's a park district program there, yes. But it's not going to be open to the public in general. But they can go into the bathrooms. If it's a summertime, the bathrooms are still.
I'm saying when you do have people there.
Yeah.
It's appropriate for that.
Right.
Question regarding the bathrooms. Are there any changes to the bathroom?
The only changes will be some, the walls will be modified for insulation. The toilets, the floor will get an upgrade, but it pretty much it's going to look how it is.
Is that the only reason I was asking? I would imagine people might want to change, or the kids might want to change clothes afterwards.
Right. So both bathrooms right now have stalls that I guess that's the opportunity if they want to do that.
Are you talking about a bench or something?
Yeah.
Is there room for a bench?
So and I'll get into that in a minute. What's going on with IDPH on that? So, So this is the site plan for the splash pad. It's divided into three zones, teen, family, and toddler. Again, it's 1,700 square feet. It's designed to be close proximity to the bathrooms. The splash pad is going to be designed for up to 8 years old. It can obviously go, it's open to everybody. So, but our basic features we found going through the process with a couple of our vendors for who do splash pad design, that seems to be the target number we want to go with. It will include both round features and stand freestanding features. And I can give you a picture of that. So this is actually the view from one side, but it will be controlled. And you can see off to your left, the single button control on it. So we will be able to, with the control center that will to be located, we'll be able to control flow. We'll be able to control times of each feature. So if you hit the button, it doesn't mean everything's going on at once. Our goal will be the splash pad does not generate more than 100 gallons a minute. So, and we're right there. If the features go full blast right now, that's where it would be. So it'll be slightly less. So here's another view. So it has the buckets, it has water cannons and spray, you know, upright sprays.
I'm realizing that I'm kind of woefully unaware now that I have a teen of splash pads. Is it, if nobody is using it, is there water on the ground then? Or
no, no. So yeah, I was going to get into that. So we looked at three options for the operation of this. One is direct flow, which is what we're doing. Water shoots out, water goes in the drain, water goes away. Yeah, that wasn't our preference. So there was two other options. One, we could create a tank with a recirculation system in it. That was our preference. The cost was astronomical. And then IDPH gets in. They count that as a pool, which means now we have the bathrooms would have to be completely gutted and rebuilt. There'd have to be showers and changing areas. We'd have to fence it. It'd have to be staffed. So it couldn't even run unless there was a guard out there trained all the time. So that was cost prohibitive in that respect. The other option we looked at was trying to store the water and reusing it for irrigation. But again, we're restricted in land. So the tank is pretty substantial in size. And let's see if I have it here. It was like we generate like 16,000 gallons we can put out a day. The tank could only hold 5,000. We only irrigate up there twice a week. So let's say even three times. Most of the water is draining through. The tank wouldn't even capture it. The other thing is IDPH again comes in. If we drain above or we irrigate above ground with it, I got to put in a filter system, which is a whole nother beast in itself. So as we ran the numbers, the most economical and most practical way of doing it was just direct in and out again. But how we're going to control it is it won't run all day. It has to be activated by button. There's timers. It doesn't mean everything's going to turn on at once. We can control flow. So we're budgeting $20,000 a year is our estimated cost.
In terms of maintenance or
water. Right. So just to give you a perspective, we spend about $28,000 for irrigation a year. So that's just the nature of the beast. So any questions?
Mike, on timers, are those timers you're going to set? Are the park district set?
Yes.
Okay.
So yeah. So like somewhere out there's going to be some master control box. And yeah, it's pretty, we've seen one. It's pretty high tech. That's actually, as we're going through the design part, we're trying to dumb it down. So I don't have to, if something breaks, I don't have to wait for it to come from some other place. I can actually readily available to prepare things so we can keep it going all the time.
But the control box is on site there. So if yes. Somebody comes up to it, they press it and then it goes.
Right. There'll be some type of box about a little bigger than this podium out there. About three times the size of this podium, it looks like, with timers and control valves and that. So
so there's an override. So whatever hours you establish that this is going to operate, there's an override. And then during the time when it's operating, people then, if there's no one using it or something comes up, then they can turn it down.
Yeah, right, right. So we expect the splash pad to be open between Memorial Day and Labor Day. It could open earlier. It can stay later. You know, that seems to be the norm now with weather changing as it does. Our operation hours, we haven't determined, but we'll at least 6 hours. It could be noon to six. It may be a little longer. We don't know yet, and we haven't gotten that far, but we know we want about 6 hours. But it's not going to be opening at 9 a.m. either. So, or staying open till 8 p.m. We'll figure that out as we go. The amenities, again, so we do have a shelter that we'll be reusing one of the picnic tables on. We'll also be putting, and I can go back. The other picnic tables will be relocated around there. So there's some family seating. Obviously, this is more of a family use facility. And then we'll be adding benches to it. Again, the drinking fountain will be there. And then the impact with the trees. So we won't be removing any trees. There's 5 trees on that site right now that need to be relocated. A couple of my memorial trees, will be relocating all of them as close as we can to where they're at right now.
It's 5 3-inch trees? Or
they're all 3-inch trees right now. Most of them we planted in the last 3 years. Okay. So, but we know we can move them all right now. So there's no impact for the trees there. And then obviously we do have a 42 stall parking lot there. We've already hired the an engineer to do the traffic and parking study. So actually they'll be out there next week. I think they're going to start doing traffic counts for us. So I don't think the DRB is going to exempt that. Well, it's going to go on. He says it goes on. Well, it's moving with baseball and the soccer season is what they're going to be monitoring. And those are ongoing right now. Right.
Mike, Erica's question about shelter made me think about the Keystone building that you said it's sort of similar to. And the Keystone building has on the west end an overhang.
Mm-hmm.
So like if it starts to rain or if the tornado siren goes off or something, presumably people can go there and, you know, have shelter. Does this building have that kind of an overhang to?
It's not designed right now for, it does not have an overhang on it. Like what we're building, we just built right over there. The only reason we did that is because, you know, that obviously was the old concession. And with the camps that we have, we're using that, trying to take advantage of that kind of wasted space.
So if the tornado siren goes off or if it starts to rain during a soccer game, can the people, the other people who are at the park go inside the building? Or
no.
Is that locked?
It'll be locked.
So there's no access to that.
Right, right.
Unless they all cram into the bathrooms.
The bathrooms would be the option.
Right. Yeah. And what's the situation with the bathrooms being available to the public? What are the hours and the seasons?
So the bathrooms up there will stay the same. They'll open around April 1st and they'll stay open till November. It's right now around November 7th or 15th, whenever the last soccer finishes up.
But what are the hours during the day?
Priory opens at 7 a.m. and then it follows sunset. So right now it's 7:30.
Okay.
So we adjust that every 2 weeks.
And how many stalls are there right now for each?
There's 2 stalls in each.
And with the splash pad, what's the anticipated number of people that it can hold at any one time?
If in the calculations, if it was, it was like 70 people at max. We don't, it's like every facility we have, we'll see a peak and then we'll find a leveled spot where use will happen.
Do we have any other picnic shelters at other parks in River Forest?
No, not right now. So again, what Katie was alluding to, we're putting in picnic tables over at this overhang that we just did a conversion. Whatever shelter we decide up there, we're actually going to put one over at Washington Triangle too.
And again, same kind of question. Do you have a sense of like how many picnic tables you would have underneath that shelter?
Well, the shelter will have one picnic table and then we'll have two outside the shelter.
Oh, okay.
Did you have a picture of that in your deck?
The shelter?
Yeah.
We haven't picked it out yet. We're still in design phase.
Smaller than I was thinking. Okay.
So it'll just be almost like a pergola, but solid. The roof.
Yeah, it'll be a solid, I think it's a 12 by 12 shelter. Solid roof, probably metal. I don't know yet.
Have you had any thoughts about is that something that people could reserve if they wanted to, or is it just free use?
Well, we're putting the shelter in just because we know this is the facility. It's going to be its most popular when the sun is out.
Yeah.
So we do want to give some opportunity. So over at the playground, where the two playgrounds meet, it's a circular pad with benches there. We're actually putting in an umbrella there too as part of the project. But that's so
really
not related.
Or reservation for folks if they want to do a...
There's no reservation, right? It's first come, first serve.
Is there
any lighting associated with this?
Just off the building. Right, because remember, it won't be on in the evenings.
Well, I mean, in the middle of summer, you're at 8 o'clock, and what are your hours?
Again, we're not sure what that would be. I don't think we'll go 8 o'clock because we're probably going more family time.
Okay, thanks.
You mentioned that there were a couple questions and just a couple of concerns. What have you been hearing from the community in terms of their concerns and questions?
So when we had the public meeting, the only questions were a couple people on shelter, the shelter size and shade. That was really the prominent feedback. Otherwise, they were pretty supportive of the whole project.
But there were two.
We had two no's.
And did they explain why?
They're just against it. What are we doing? What are we thinking?
No more detail than that.
No. Waste of taxpayer money.
And I'm assuming you contact the people who donated the money for the memorial trees and let them know that those trees are being moved and make sure that they...
We will notify everybody when we get to that point.
Those who have donated the money.
Yeah, there's two memorial trees. I think both of them are board members. So they're memorial trees for our own board members. So it'll be easy to get a hold of them. I think one's Ross. But yeah, we'll notify them and put out a notice for the brick. The brick, we don't have all the files on those people anymore.
Are you done?
Yes, I am done.
I think the park thinking, you're still in the design phase.
We're in the design phase. So just schedule-wise, we're looking to begin construction after summer camp, which would be mid-August. We anticipate the building will be operational by Christmas, and the splash pad, if it isn't done in the fall, it would be ready by grand opening on Memorial Day weekend.
So, Matt, how do those dates line up with the DRB and the process they have to go through?
Sure. So the next step would be the introduction to the Development Review Board, which is a similar presentation, and then just a request for any waivers from the application process. As Mike referenced, the traffic study is a common request, but in this case, we felt it was warranted. So that will take place likely in May. And then we'll work closely with the Park District on reviewing the complete application and look for sometime during the summer for a public hearing for the Development Review Board.
I just would encourage you to really think about the bathroom because, if you don't have a place to sit down and change and you're using the stalls, then it could be a hot mess.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have room in there. We could look at putting benches and stuff. Right. Yeah, no, that's a good idea. Because there is space in there. There's a lot of extra space in that room. Okay. Great. Thank you.
And the next up is the presentation of the Village update by Trish. Hi, everybody. Thanks for
having me. And push the button. So the staff has been looking at the employee handbook for a pretty significant amount of time. And I just wanted to bring a couple updates to you today. No decision needs to be made. I just wanted to let you know what we've been working on and who we've been working on it with. So the last time the employee handbook was updated was in 2018. The new employee handbook, we changed the name from personnel manual to employee handbook, and that is just a symbolic shift to towards employee engagement and support for employees, really. It's not really anything big. We just shifted the tone and style of the handbook. I guess I'm supposed to be doing this. Oops. Sorry. So staff reviewed the handbook as well as our attorneys and our labor attorneys. Also, it was reviewed by Nova Collective, which was the consultant that was hired by in concert with the DEI AG and the village board and president, as well as our insurance carrier, Irma. There was some gaps in the current manual from the Irma insurance carrier. We have a tri-annual policy review. So that was carried out late last summer. So we either revised some policies or we added policies that needed to be added. Nova Collective recommended that they thought we should promote more inclusivity and non-punitive language throughout the handbook. They also recommended that we proposed to recognize Juneteenth as a village holiday, and also they targeted some changes in the benefits and the language. So some of those changes were we changed the word probationary period to orientation period, and also we used some gender-neutral terms throughout the handbook. Some of these changes might seem slight, but it shows that the village encourages and helps employees to succeed, as opposed to being more punitive and looking for ways to show that they can't succeed. If the board approves recognizing Juneteenth as a holiday, it would be added as a paid holiday for non-bargaining staff and also the FOP. In past negotiations with the FOP, the village agreed to give the police the Juneteenth as a paid holiday if it was given to the non-union staff. We also kind of shifted the language in the policy to more of an open door policy, and this was added to enhance employee engagement. We wanted to encourage employees to come to us or their supervisor to reduce the need for formal discipline. We still have the progressive discipline in our handbook, but we wanted to try to get away from that as much as possible and encourage dialogue between supervisors and the employees. a lot of the language in the old personnel manual was kind of punitive in nature, so we wanted to just try to get away from that. Some of the policy additions or changes, the Pregnancy Discrimination Act is something new that we added. We also added a code of conduct and a transitional or light duty policy. We also wanted to add AI usage policy to the handbook, just making sure employees understand that they are still responsible for all of their work if they use the AI. We updated our dress code policy and the romantic or sexual relationship policy. So we are continuing to plan for the future. We have some anticipated retirements in some of the department heads in the next coming years. We are going to continue to review benefits. We're going to need to be creative in our when we look to the future. Just for recruiting and retaining employees, it's going to get harder and harder. So we have been participating in surveys with other communities to see what they're doing. We've also been participating with the ILCMA in some of their seminars to see some of the creative ways that other villages are handling their benefits. We also are doing a retention and mentorship programs. One of the most successful one we've had so far, we started in January of 24 with our public works employees. We partnered with the Illinois Rural Water Association to help mentor our maintenance workers to get their water operator licenses. Water operators are very hard to come by, so we're training our employees from within to get their water operator licenses. We only have one full-time water operator right now. We have two full-time water operators, but one of them is the superintendent of public works. So he is not full-time, but he does have his water operator license.
So Trish, can I ask on that point? So when the village does that, do we require the employee to stay on for a certain period?
So we did give them a letter, and we worked with the union to make sure that they were okay with the program. It's a 2-year program. We allow two of the maintenance workers to be in the program at one time. The program costs about $1,000. Somebody from the Rural Water Association comes out once, I believe, a month or every other month to help the people in the program with their homework assignments and anything that they don't understand, so that at the end of the 2-year program, they're hopefully able to pass the water operator exam. We also help them get their water operator hours. So that's something new within the past several years. Water operators have to log a certain number of hours. And so we have a mentorship program for them. No,
and then my question though is, once they get it, do they commit to staying with the village for 2 years or something, or a certain period?
Because I'm
just wondering, if you do all this and then they go, bye-bye, I'm going to another village.
Did not include that in there. As we worked with the union, you know, we kind of, it was a give and take. They don't pass the program, if they pass the program or finish the program 1 year into the program, we increase their salary as a water operator. But if they don't finish the program within the 2 years, then we bring them back to where they should be. as a maintenance worker.
So isn't that an incentive for people to want to come here knowing that they will be having this opportunity
Correct.
To get there?
Yes.
And so kind of building on what Rez is asking, that is not part of their tuition reimbursement package that they might additionally request then, that $1,000?
Right. That's just something that the village pays for as part of this program. And we only allow two people at a time to do it. So we have somebody who's very close, we hope, finishing the program much faster than the 2 years. And if he passes the test, then we'll allow somebody else to start the program if they want.
But the idea, though, is they complete it, they get the higher salary or an increase in salary.
Exactly. Right.
That encourages this.
And we also should have two full-time water operators.
Sure.
So
sure.
It's an incentive for them.
Okay.
For sure to want to work here and B, just the people who do work here to, you know, better themselves.
Good. Sorry. I mean,
The hourly rate for water operators is higher than the hourly rate because of this, the
Correct.
Required training that the part of it, there's
okay.
higher
I just
rate.
Want to see what the incentive was for them to.
Oh, stay yeah, yeah. Advance. Sorry.
Okay. No, that's okay. That's okay.
And we also are mentoring the some of the lower level staff, you know, the people at the front counter and the payroll clerk to get their degrees and, you know, hopefully be able to fill some spots when some other people are going to retire in the next several years. That's all I have for you. Does anybody else have any questions?
No.
Questions?
Yeah.
Yep, good work.
Thank you so much. I know you guys worked through some of these, so appreciate it. I think that's all we have.
I have an aside to that.
Yep.
In the presentation, that's the first time I've seen the Nova name mentioned, and I know we paid these guys a lot of money. Are we ever going to kind of get a recap of what's going on and where that money went and what was found out? You know, what were the conclusions made by that study?
Mm-hmm. Happy to talk to that. So we have a draft of something right now in front of us. So Ken and I are looking to, we continue to look at it. So we're looking at it this week. That's, yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Erica. Super. Then we don't have executive session, so we'll just need a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
She's
there. Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell. Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
President Ducey.